That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome back to Surf Splendor. This is, of course, your host, David Scales. I've got an episode, brand new episode today, of Grit with Chaz Smith. So I'm sure that you figured it out, or just by listening to past episodes of this particular show format, but Grit is designed to give you a peek behind the curtain of BeachGrit.com. Obviously, BeachGrit.com is run by Chaz Smith and his partner, Derek Riley. And so our goal here is just to kind of discuss the various articles, the subtext, the conversations that take place after articles get posted, all that sort of stuff. So enjoy this show. I'll be back actually later in this week with an episode of Shaping Surfing with Dane Hance. You might not know Dane's name, but his label is Vulcan Surf. So if you're on Instagram or you follow board porn, I'm sure that you've seen Dane's boards. At Vulcan Surf is their actual handle. Definitely check those out before I post that episode so you have kind of a context for what we're talking about. But super interesting dude. I didn't really know what to expect. I had never met him before, but I was thrilled by the end of the interview, not only to know him, but to be able to share that conversation with you guys. So that'll be out on Thursday. Coming weeks, I have episodes with filmmaker Jack Coleman and surfboard shaper Ryan Lovelace as well. Those conversations are already in the can, so look forward to those on this, the Surf Splendor network of podcasts at this point. So enjoy today's show with Chaz Smith. You can follow, of course, his website, beachgrit.com, and then on Instagram, Chaz is Reports From Hell. And then, of course, follow at Surf Splendor and then surfsplendorpodcast.com, where I'll post everything that Chaz and I discussed in this episode. Chime in with your comments on Instagram and, of course, on our respective websites. All right. Enjoy the show. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. It's always weird setting up the mics and trying not to talk.
No, I know.
But it's, but it's the right thing to do.
I've known precisely. You talk about a subject and it's dead. You lose all energy for the subject.
And one of the subjects is just, what's up, dude? Long time no see.
It has been a long time.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Sorry it took so long to get back together.
Oh, I know. But that's okay. I think we needed it. I think we needed all of these things to happen in surfing.
I agree. Lots has gone on.
Yeah.
And so, firstly, is that a computer that you have with you? Did you actually prep for today's show?
No, I didn't prep at all. I am late on a Beach Grit story, so I was trying to smash it out real quick. I think I've got a good three in the bag today that I need to get up. So
three stories in one day.
Three. Yeah, that's my. I think that's my typical, or that's what I try to do. That's my pace. It's not. Yeah.
Well, let's, before we get into Beach Grit stories, and I think we should break that story here first.
Okay.
But before we do that, let's say thanks to the Surf Rider Foundation for hosting us today. This is our now our home studio.
I don't even get looked at when I walked in the door. There's just a nice like glance from the cute receptionist, and I march straight back to our studio.
She knows. She knows who you are.
That's nice.
Hey, that's Chaz Smith. I heard his show last time.
Yeah, it's nice. She's a listener. Long-time listener.
Surfrider.org is their website. And guess what? You can become a member. It's only $25 a year to save the earth.
And you get that sticker on your car.
And they make board laminates now, too.
Really?
Yeah. I've got them on my boards.
Oh, my goodness.
You want to know what else they make, Chaz? T-shirts.
Oh. And
this is yours.
Oh, it is?
New Surfrider logo right here.
I like it. I like the minimal. Yeah. Nice. Thank you, Surfrider.
Yeah. There you go. Chaz Smith going to be rocking the Surfrider T-shirt down in San Diego.
I so am. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, what do we have to catch up on? What's new in your life, dude, since I saw you last?
Oh, I mean, just so much. I was begging for professional surfing. I was so sad at the break between, what even was the last contest? Between Fiji and J-Bay. And I was thinking, this is way too long a break. And then J-Bay hit with such a hammer that I've been begging for professional surfing to stop. So my life has been consumed by professional surfing.
Which, I mean, was that the best event ever?
I think I can't imagine another event that would hold a candle between the Sharks and the, I don't know how they got so much swell. How in the world did they get like 15 days of perfect swell that culminated in the best final waves, at least I'd ever seen at J-Bay, right? I mean,
yeah,
it was pretty epic.
So gnarly.
Yeah.
What were the highlights of the event for you?
To me, the highlights was the main highlight was Long Tom Steve Shear's write-ups each day for Beach Grit.
We're just now announcing that he is Steve Shearer.
I think it's been known. I think,
okay.
Which I got to ask him specifically. I think he doesn't hide behind Long Tom. I think he likes the nickname Long Tom, but I'll get to the bottom of that. I think it's not a, this isn't me thing.
Okay.
It's well known that it's Steve Shear, I think, or maybe not well known, but it's known that it's Steve Shearer. Yeah, Steve Shearer. But his write-ups to me are, I mean, it makes me, yeah, I like his write-ups better than watching it, to be honest.
I was going to ask you, when you wait for us, J-Bay happens in the middle of the night. So maybe you could stay up late and watch one or two heats and then wake up early and see the last couple heats. When you wake up early, do you actually watch the event first or read his?
No. So he was sending it to me just because the way the time difference was happening with, it was easier for me to post them on a couple of them. So I would just go straight to my email like 5 a.m. or whenever I woke up. And it was absolutely, yeah. I mean, I read each one of his contest raps, I think a few times, just treasuring each word. And I'm not just saying that because it's on Beach Grit. To me, he's really elevated contest writing to high art.
Sweet.
Yeah.
What's, give the listeners and myself just like a background on Steve.
I have no idea. He's Australian. I have no idea even how old. I think he's maybe a little older. Older than 40, I think. But otherwise, I really have no idea.
How does he make a living?
He says he has a job, but I don't know what that job is.
Yeah. What? How do you get him to write for you guys?
Derek. I mean,
they're buddies?
I don't know that they're buddies. I think Derek's, it's just one of those, you know, Steve, I think, has been around in surf riding for a real long time. And Derek knows everybody from Australia. And so I think they know each other somehow.
Do you guys pay for your articles?
Yeah. Yeah. Steve gets paid. Yep.
Okay.
And Mikey Ciamarella did get paid, but no longer. He got shown the door.
Really? Yep. Breaking news, dude.
Breaking news.
Holy cow.
Mikey Ciamarella fired from Beach Grit.
Oh my God.
Fired
for cause.
That's how
this episode's going to be titled.
Fired for cause.
Dude, people come and go. Like, you guys just fire people left
and
right. Between Rory and now Michael.
No, it's part of the thing.
What did he do?
He went and took a weekly gig at Stab. So congratulations.
Did he tell you guys
to Mikey.
About it?
He didn't. I mean, he told me about it after he took it.
Okay.
He told me about it yesterday. So this is breaking news. Mikey Ciamarella fired for cause.
Crazy.
Yeah. So he's going to be riding I think a piece a week for Stab, which is good for him. I hope I wish him nothing but the best and yeah, wish him good things, but there's just there's no way that Beach Grit can support a Stab rider.
Do you guys view Stab as competition?
Yeah, I think just because you know, Derek of course started Stab, and so I think that there's that raw nerve, which I love. I love that there is a raw nerve there, that it's not just, you know, we're all bros and having fun and all that. I actually crashed the Stab booth at Agenda, which was pretty fun.
What'd you do?
Yeah. I gave Morgan Williamson a big hug, and then we chatted for a while, and then I forced Morgan Williamson to come out and have a beer with me.
How did that go?
I went good. Morgan's, I think, just he's a guy just trying to get by. He's a poetry major, which was totally amazing. I don't know why he doesn't make that well known. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he majored in poetry from San Francisco State, I think, which explains some of his turn of phrase, I suppose. And yeah, I think he was angry inside, but he sucked it up and yeah, had a beer.
Well, it's really funny. You said he's angry inside at you, and I'm thinking, why is he angry? And it's like, oh yeah, because maybe some of the things that you've written in past. And what I'm saying is funny is I've gotten to know you a little bit, and I feel like your persona as a writer is very different than how I know you just individually. And I guess we don't spend any time together off the mic, really, but you're actually, I think people would like you. I think people read you and the writer persona and don't like you.
See that? I mean, maybe. I think both of the writer persona and who I am in real life used to be more separate, but I think they've merged over time now, where at the end of the day, I mean, and again, it was the same thing that kind of happened when I ran into the inertia, right? Is I like, for me, it's fun. Conflict is fun. And conflict doesn't have to mean that, you know, you're like personally angry at someone. It just means, I don't know. It's just fun. It's especially in surf journalism. It's fun. It's fun to throw rocks. It's fun to, you know, we've talked about it on this show. And yeah, it's enjoyable for me. So
have you and Derek ever butt heads?
Me and Derek Riley?
Yeah.
Yeah. We do sometimes, but very, 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 I can't even remember the last time we did, to be honest. So maybe
pretty
no.
Impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, we've both been working together for so long now and just understand each other probably fairly well. And there's nothing, I don't think there's any real decision that, would be worth, you know, kind of sacrificing that relationship. And I would imagine maybe he feels the same way. So it's just, you know, we talk stuff out, but then we come to a pretty quick decision on what we're going to do going forward.
So I record a podcast with Scott Bass, obviously. It's called Spit. And Scott and I had a moment back in May where we just had a conflict. Like, I thought we were doing one thing together. He thought we were doing another thing together. And we'd been doing it for 4 years. And it came up. And it's like, well, we can't proceed until we get this resolved.
Did you resolve it on air?
No, we had the fight on air.
Okay.
And then we resolved it. We took some time off. We had like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Like, we're not going to chat. And to your point about like lobbing grenades at people, I felt a lot of emotion about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any problem saying that on the air and airing it out. Because at the end of the day, it's like, hey, we're not going to throw punches at each other. We're both adults here. And we will resolve this. So until that time, knowing we're not going to fight and knowing it will get resolved, until that time, I'm going to wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm going to tell you how I feel about it, knowing that you're an adult and you're going to do that to me, and then we'll resolve it down the road.
Well, and to me, you know, in the surf media game too, that's entertaining, right?
It was entertaining.
And when listeners get to listen in on these true, genuine interactions that people are having and genuine fights and all this kind of, I mean, there's something... Yeah, there's just something real about it, and that's a lot more enjoyable, I think, when that's mixed in to the stew of surf journalism alongside the more standard, you know, contest stuff, or this board just came out, or, you know, Kelly's wave pool or Kelly's foot or whatever.
Right.
It just adds another layer that I think is enjoyable. And so that's why I continue to prod. But then when I see Morgan in person, I mean, and part of it is probably, you know, I want to exacerbate it too. I love shit talking and then jumping right into the middle of what I was shit talking, just to see how people react, because you know, like the real, and Morgan again handled it like a real champ. I mean, he did well. But, you know, all the staff guys were there, right? And so it's just, we had a, you know, a good hour-long conversation I did with them all because, you know, I was at STAB before.
Right.
And so we had fun conversations. But initially, you know, just the pained smiles.
Yeah.
It's just that nobody knows. Nobody, I've never, you know, been somewhere where people said, you know, fuck you, get out of here right away. People will try to put on a good face, but just the pain of that smile is, yeah, maybe I'm perversely enjoyable.
I think you're more comfortable with conflict than they are probably. And so like with Scott, he hosts the Boardroom Show, this surfboard industry trade show. And we connected there for the first time seeing each other in weeks. And he walked up to me and he's like, hey man, I just want to shake hands and like say, let's forget about our differences through the course of this weekend because we're going to see each other a lot. And I go, you know what, Scott? I will shake your hand, but don't act like we're friends.
Yeah.
Dig in. And he's like, what do you mean? And I go, we're going to have fans coming up to us all week long asking about the fight. Say your piece, dude. Yeah. Take your side, and I'm going to take my side because I'm still angry at you.
Sure.
And I completely disagree. And again, we'll figure this out down the road through communication, but right now, don't fake it.
And especially, I mean, yeah, for entertainment,
it's better.
It's more entertaining.
Guess what? When we do resolve it and we record another podcast, that's going to get more downloads than any podcast we've ever had before. Look at like Howard Stern having conflicts with co-hosts. Nobody stops listening.
No, of course
not. As much as they love Artie Lang, if he goes away, they still listen to Howard.
Totally.
You know? So
totally.
Who cares, dude?
No, totally. Well, and again, having differences of opinion, like, everybody papers over stuff, and I, you know, back to kind of STAB or whatever, I do have genuine differences of opinion with how they kind of report surfing and with the inertia and all of them, right? And so that's what makes it fun. I mean, you can get, it's not just all milquetoast, same color, same, you know, flavor. There's differences, and you can find what you like in the mix.
It is, and I understand why you would not be able to work with Michael now moving forward because they are a competitor in some way. But I would argue they're actually not really a competitor. They're doing something very, very different. And I actually thought about this prior to knowing this Michael story. But I wanted to ask your opinion. Like, STAB has done a great job of creating these proprietary events with the doc recently.
Sure, totally.
Jay Davies' Native edit that he posted a few weeks ago where they own it for whatever 24 hours or whatever it is, and all of us go watch it. The entire surf world, from Kelly Slater to Joe Schmo, watch this thing and then discuss it collectively on all the social platforms. So you guys aren't doing stuff like that. You're not even attempting to do stuff like that.
See, that's the, I mean, and I guess now that you talk about me and Derek butting heads, this is where Derek really wants to do. I mean, those kinds of things, those STAB properties, Derek loves that stuff, right? That's what he did at STAB too. You know, they did. I mean, I think that idea is the brainchild of Derek, probably even more than it is of Sam, the owner of STAB, or the now owner of STAB. Derek wants to do that. And we have one, you know, we have one in the can right now I can't talk about it, but or it's not in the can, but trying to get in the can. Derek loves this idea. And to me, these things are gimmicks. And so it's not where I'm pulled. I like when I see the doc, I legitimately don't care about it. You know, I don't really watch it. I get that it's the flavor of the day. And I guess at a cognitive level, I understand that people like these gimmicky kind of things, but to me, I don't know. I'm not the market for it, but Derek loves those kinds of things, and it irks him to no end that STAB has the corner of this market.
So the doc, it's just fun to watch. I watched 5 minutes of it, and it was just the most fun surfing related thing I've watched in a long time.
See, yeah. And I guess I watched and thought, okay, that's fine. Funny, I talked to Sam about it at Agenda, and he seemed pretty disappointed with how it came off. I think they were expecting these surfers to do like board flips and stuff into the wave, right? Wow. So you run down the stock and you do something awesome into the wave, but you know all they could do is jump off their boards and get in the wave. So I think in his mind it was going to be this bigger. It was going to be it was going to look better than it did. You know, I thought it looked great.
Yeah, it did.
It's just, it wasn't interesting to me. But I totally see how that stuff is interesting to people.
So I don't think that was as much of a cultural movement as Jay Davies' edit Native was, actually.
Yeah.
Even though that had so much planning and it was like their own property, whereas the Jay Davies thing, he just produced with his sponsor on his own and then sold it to them. Did you watch the Jay Davies thing?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Because okay. you don't care about Jay Davies or because of Stab?
But probably a little bit of both. Okay. I mean, Jay Davies is not the most interesting surfer to me. And when Stab does stuff, when Stab, did they wrap the site with it? I mean, was it one of those? That always annoys me, right?
No, like, me too.
And so I just, if I see that, I'll generally click off pretty quick.
It makes me actually want to avoid it. Even if I wanted to watch it, now I'm going to do it out of spite.
Sure.
I'm going to go around.
No, I like when I see the site wrapped, and I know there's value there, and Beach Girl will probably end up doing that at some point too. But it's an annoying, why are you making a barrier for me? If I want to see it, I'll see it, right? Don't throw it up like that. But I totally understand the economics of it. And again, coming soon to a beach crit near you, but probably. But that's why I didn't watch it.
I don't know if I understand the economics to it, because I'm already going to your site to look at something.
So I think it's you can sell that whole landing page, so somebody pays to own that space, right? So it's not just you want people to watch the video. Whoever paid for the video gets this added bonus, right? Of it's gonna pop up and your logo is gonna be there, and it's not gonna be our regular content. It's gonna be this special kind of thing, which, you know, so it's just it's value added, I think. And I would like to do a poll on it on Beach Grit, if you know, do you like, as a reader, does it annoy you when you show up and there's a landing page, or are you like, oh, this is awesome, it looks different today, and there's clearly something fun happening here?
The real poll should be, we know it annoys you, but does that mean you never go back to the site again?
Some people do like it. Maybe people click on and say, oh, it's something new today. This is sexy.
But my point is, nobody ever closes the site because the landing page is there. I think everybody still watches it or clicks through to the next page.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's any attrition.
I mean, I close it. If I see a landing page, I'm like, spite. Hey, enough. Yeah.
You're very spiteful.
I'm a spiteful man. Mike, you see, but that's the other thing. Like, Stab does a great job of poaching Beach Grit talent. So that, which is totally fine. But I think a problem with Stab is they don't really have their own voice. I think they're still drafting off what Derek created, you know, 5 or 6 years ago before he left. Like, their tone is Derek light.
I agree.
And you know, so they keep trying to find a voice. And again, Mikey, is a good writer, and I wish him all the best, but I don't think they're not finding a fully developed voice, and definitely not a voice that's unique yet. Mikey might become unique. But
so did Mikey have what's his background prior to you guys connecting with him?
He was surfing. He was at Surfing Magazine briefly.
Okay.
But like kind of right at the demise of surfing. And so then he came on, and I liked his stuff at surfing. And again, I loved some of his stuff for Beach Grit. To me, his high watermark was the Christian Fletcher thing, which was absolutely epic, where he called Christian Fletcher out. And then went down to interview Christian, or went up to interview Christian in San Clemente, and Christian had basically staged. Did you read this?
No.
Oh, Christian had basically staged this like thing where he was going, like they put Michael on stage with Christian, and they recorded it, and they had a crowd, and Christian basically, you know, they went over the, I think it was about heckling Groms or something was the topic, and if I remember, Michael was like, his position was that Christian was too old to be heckling Groms, and Christian, I believe, was like, these Groms need to learn respect or something. And so, so Michael went up to San Clemente. Christian had it staged. It was like before the screening of a movie or something, had the audience, you know, booing Michael and stuff like that. And Michael took it like a champ and wrote, they're really funny.
I'll find them.
Oh yeah. But really well done. Really amazing. Michael's totally got it in him to become something. And you know, would have been great if he would have become that at Beach Grit, but I think Stab is getting another bit of Derek Light.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are teeing him up though for Stab. You're just like developing these writers because it's prolific. The amount of output is prolific that you're pumping out pieces all day, every day. So it allows him to just figure out his foot really quickly.
Totally. And it's great.
Yeah.
Good for Stab. Wish him all the best.
So, dude, did you ever talk to Albie Layer after our last show?
I did. I totally did. Yeah.
What happened?
So Albie Layer first wants to come on. Can Albie Layer come on
of
the
course,
show? Okay, dude. So we'll have Albie on. But yeah, so Albie, it was all he says, and I believe him. It was a big joke directed at you. that Albi is a literate young man.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, and he had you. He had you over the barrel.
Did he ever say, I couldn't care less or
nope.
I could care less?
He could care less. I mean, I'm sorry. He couldn't care less.
Okay.
And he, what was the
prank
second one?
Call versus crank
yeah,
call.
Yeah, he's a prank caller.
Okay.
He couldn't care less and he prank calls.
I Albi apologize, Albi.
Albi Lehr, a smart young man. But yeah, we should bring him on. He's great. And yeah.
Next time he's in town.
Yeah, I think he's here all the time. Okay.
Is he really?
He lives, I think he splits time between Maui and San Diego, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. So, cool. Yeah.
All right, he's on, dude.
Albi Lehr.
Dude, follow up question as well. I'm going to call this segment the Blonde Ambition Tour. I was telling you, blonde-haired people are ripping nowadays, and sure enough, Felipe dyes his hair blonde, and bang, dominates the J-Bay Open.
I mean, dominated at wire to wire, too. I mean, could it be argued that Philippe Toledo had the greatest single event of any surfer? I mean, how many tens did he bag?
It's a good question.
It was perfect waves the whole time. The variety of the, you know, he surfed from, you know, huge alley-oops to slashing carves to, yeah. I mean, I don't even have the Joe Turpel language to describe.
Well, I would argue he did that in 2015 at Snapper.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that.
I remember that.
It was like, nobody, Kelly can't do this. John can't do that. Nobody can do what he was doing there. I just never would have expected to see him do it on waves that were well overhead.
Well, seeing, I mean, those, both the two oops he did on that one wave.
Yeah.
Like thinking about his, I was thinking about his perspective looking down. He, I mean, how much above the, like, you know, the ocean was he there? I mean, from the trough or whatever.
At least 8
feet.
Well, no, the wave itself was 6 to 8
precisely.
Feet, and then so, he was 6 feet above.
So he was a good, possibly 15 feet,
yeah.
You know, up in the air, which I don't know how you do that and then do it twice. I don't know how you get your feet set again. I mean, that wave, you know, was obviously incredible, but the way he surfed the entire event, and it was, to me, it was great that he won, because rarely does the guy who is on fire, or I think it's, yeah, rarely, I think, do I see it happen where the guy's on who's, you know, the most on fire through the event really pulls through all the way. Usually it right. seems like he gets tired by the end and you
or,
know.
Or Kelly talks about peaking too early.
Yeah.
So it's like he'll have an amazing quarterfinal heat and then falter. John does that all the time.
Completely. Semis, you know? And I feel in who was really ripping through Fiji? Somebody was just blowing. blowing up, but then you could tell he doesn't have any gas in the tank.
Yeah.
And whoever lost in the final there.
Yeah, Felipe is so young and spry, he's just got endless energy, you know.
It was so good. It was so incredible. It's a real bummer that looking back that Felipe wasn't at Fiji. Remember?
Yeah.
He was banned.
Agreed.
Banned from Fiji.
Agreed. Yeah, I never got around to asking you, but I was going to ask you on the first time we recorded together. What was he banned for? Like everybody says he got that call against the interference call against Kanoa, and then he stormed the judge's tower.
Yep.
What does that even mean?
I have no
idea.
Did
he punch somebody in the face?
No.
Did he curse at somebody?
No.
Like, I don't know what it means.
I think at the time I remember thinking too, okay, it's when Zeke Lau storms the tower, then it's, you know, oh, we're sorry. But when the little Brazilian does, then it's banned.
Right.
Yeah. It seemed pretty rude.
And it's funny what you're saying. Like they give the Hawaiian respect, but they don't give this guy respect. But I think that there's got to be an actual defining line of like, you're allowed to come up there and be angry, but if you cuss, maybe that's the define, or if you pound on the door, I don't know. I just want to know what it was that he did.
I don't exactly know what, like, because I know Zeke Lau was up the steps of the judging tower and they were wrong on Zeke Lau.
Yeah.
So maybe Zeke got the benefit because
they said he got up after the buzzer, but he didn't.
Yeah. And so they were wrong. And so maybe that was part of their thing. And Philippe, you know, I can't even remember what his beef was, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the line is, but come on, they should let those guys hack on the judges all day long.
Yeah. Well, like, to your point, it's just a shame that we didn't get to see him in Fiji.
Yeah.
Cause that's a huge question mark for all of us.
Totally. And he could, and where would he be right now? Right. If he would have performed well in Fiji, then, you know, I think he's seventh in the world now, which, you know, could he be up in the top three?
Could be. You did a power rankings on WCT. This is back to the blonde hair, the Blonde Ambition Tour. You did a power ranking on the CT's surfers' haircuts. Discuss it. Break it down. Who's got what?
See, the first one was Negatron, one of our commenter moderators. His was so amazing. I think his was 3 years ago, back when nobody really went to Beach Crit. And he honestly ranked, I think, the top 15 by haircut, which was brilliant. So I went in. Somebody had commented about it on Beach Crit, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go in here and do it again because it's such a funny idea. I totally forgot about it. But I went in, and the first two were Wilco and Jordy, or the two of the first three. And their hair in their CT picture has so much body and so much shine. They're honestly like shampoo commercials. And so I couldn't get beyond them. Like, so it was good. Wilco versus Jordy for who is the Pert Plus Man of the Year.
And who won?
Wilco by far. Wilco honestly has like 43-year-old mother hair.
It's so true.
It is. I have no idea what he was thinking for sure when he got the haircut, but I have no idea what he was thinking when he washed it that morning and then conditioned it and then washed it again and then blue dry it and then went in to take his picture for the WSL for the entire year that comes up every single time he serves.
Yeah.
It's a miraculous mistake.
It doesn't look that bad on video.
No.
When he's just wearing it around, it doesn't look bad, but he got the worst possible photo of it.
He honestly, which should be it's a good lesson to all the listeners out there, I think. Never, ever, ever shampoo, condition, and blow dry your hair before going to get a picture taken.
Good point. What's your hair care regimen?
Surf and never wash it.
When you say never, what do you mean by never?
I'll go a good, in the summer when I'm, I'll go a good 2 months, 3 months between washes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've got you beat.
How long?
I'm a huge fan.
Of never washing. Yeah. You don't need to wash.
You really don't.
No.
Yeah. And you're not saying you, David Scales, don't need to wash. It's just you as a human don't need to
wash. I don't think hair needs washing. You can get it wet.
People are so mistaken.
Yeah.
And I think Johnson & Johnson has mind-effed everybody into thinking that they need their products.
Well, I think that Matt Wilkinson hopefully is the anecdote to that when you could see...
That is a good point.
When you see Matt Wilkinson and mom hair.
It is so mom hair. That's such a good call.
It's dude. Shocking. It's shockingly hilarious. Mommy.
Okay, so last time I washed my hair, I've never, never, ever discussed this publicly because I carried a lot of shame about it for a period.
Oh, yeah.
Not shame, but just like it requires a lot of explanation and people don't get it. And then like I'd be dating somebody and like I'd wait until like month two to even mention it because I knew that they'd be disgusted.
Hey, I don't wash my hair.
Right. So no. February 15th, 2014 was the last time I washed my hair.
Oh, you have me crushed.
Years.
Crushed.
I'm going on 4 years.
That's
three
amazing.
And a half years.
That is amazing.
It's insane. So I never planned on doing it for years. I was just like, I had heard somebody talking about it on the radio and they're like, shampoo's only been around since whatever the date was, like in the 30s or 40s or something. Prior to that, nobody ever washed their hair. And your hair creates natural oils to keep it healthy and in balance. But what shampoo does is strip all those oils out, and then conditioner is meant to replace it. So I was always very oily. And if I didn't wash my hair for one day, it would go into hyperdrive and produce tons of oil. And so I thought, oh, I need to wash my hair every single day because I'll get... Well, but the person on... the radio was saying is like by day five,
you're balanced.
You balance. You find that balance. And that's exactly what happened. I hit day six and I looked in the mirror and I go, this is the look I've been trying to achieve with shampoo, conditioner, and then product.
Yep.
And I don't always get there. And now it just lives there. And
yep.
It's zero maintenance.
Yep. It's easy. So, it's an easy life.
It's an easy life, dude. So we're on the same page.
I'm glad about that.
I think we need to rank surf podcasters' haircuts.
CO.
Be the power ranking.
I think Jed Smith would be number one, right?
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, yeah, the Bogan mullet, I know that it's like, a wink, wink, ironic thing.
Yeah.
But I think he's worn it. Derek and I were just talking about when you wear something or do something long enough ironically, and then it becomes totally real. Like, I think we all throw shakas ironically from time to time. And then for a lot of people, for me, a little shaka is totally now a real genuine greeting or a wave goodbye.
Yep.
And also, I ran out of Beach Grip board shorts. And a few months ago, I'd ordered from eBay. I saw them and thought they were so hilarious that I had to get them. A pair of the Metallica Billabong board short. Remember those?
I do.
Well below the knee. Big, giant, sewn-on patch of Metallica on the butt. I literally ran out of board shorts. And so I had to wear them to the beach. And then I kept wearing them. And I'm wearing them today as They're, I mean, I bought some better ones now, but yeah, I don't feel ironically bad. I feel like I'm ahead of the trend somehow by wearing my Metallica boardies. They're white.
I don't think they were ever on trend, even when they came out. So you might be a, yeah, you are ahead of the trend.
I feel
the trend is coming.
I feel the trend is coming. I feel the at the knee with a giant Metallica patch on the butt. And I put them on with shame the first couple times. And then after that, I was like, oh, these don't look so bad. I'm wearing a Metallica dress, but it's okay.
A Metallica dress. So dude, I always want to support Beach Grit. And so when you guys offered your board shorts, I was like, dude, I'm going to be first in line. So I bought a pair. And Derek's like, you're going to have the first pair in Huntington Beach. This is the first time I've shipped a package there. And I'm like, perfect. I'll wear them with pride, being ahead of the trend. They showed up. Dude, the inseam is so short. I don't even feel comfortable wearing them around the house by myself.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, see, you got to give them a try. Like me and the Metallicas, just put them on and go to the beach. Wear the shame. Wait till your thigh tans up there. And you're going to start feeling like the Beach Grip board short. Is to me, it's a real work of art. Derek really, I think they're Derek designed, and they're Rama McCabe, who he works at Banks now.
Oh, okay.
But he might have designed them. But anyway,
he did.
Yeah,
his name's on them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a brilliant trunk. You have to be brave, but take it,
dude.
Go home today and put them on and go to the beach. Which color did you get?
Black.
Yeah, the blacks
are faded, good. By the way.
Yeah, that's good. The fade is good.
Yeah,
the black.
So
fade.
I put them on and I looked in the mirror and I'm like, again, don't even feel comfortable in my own house wearing these things. The beach definitely won't fly. The only places this might fly is like a pool party in Palm Springs or maybe Miami or something. I'll get a lot of attention there.
You'll still feel shame. See, I'm telling you, like me and the Metallicas, it's too, or like you and your washed hair, you get through the initial kind of shame phase and then you look down and you think I think the human mind has a magnificent ability to think, oh, this doesn't look bad. As long as you're going to insist, if you force your body to do it.
Good point.
Then your mind adjusts. Says, yeah, that's pretty good.
The confidence is sexy.
The confidence is sexy.
If and you own it.
And you need the tan. Because if you're with, you know, white thighs and then shorts, then people know that you're, oh, this guy's taking this out for a spin. You got to get beyond this guy's taking it for a spin. You have to get to this is this guy's life.
Just rock it.
Yeah, just with zero nothing.
Does it matter that my legs are like extra skinny? Does that help or hinder?
Look at my legs, and I feel it helps.
Don't ask me.
I'm gonna wear my. Oh, if I had a pair, I left mine in Palm Springs. Speaking of, so I don't even have a pair anymore.
Are they available on your website for sale? Can we direct listeners to go buy some Beach Grit trunks?
Right now? Hopefully, they might all be sold out. But
that's the thing. They're so amazing.
Yeah,
sold out instantly.
I mean, totally. Everybody who didn't want a pair of tiny Beach Grit boardies.
That segues perfectly into another discussion topic from Beach Grit, which is you wrote a story about Connor Coffin being the ideal surfing shape.
I think so. Maybe I really thought about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to say that a tall, thin man is, but of course the tall, thin man isn't. The tall, thin man is a little willow who gets blown over by the slightest breeze. When
you and I.
Completely.
Yeah.
When you see Connor mowing down the line, like round or fluffy and close to the board, you know, throwing spray, fitting into little tubes. It dawned on me that the short round man is surfing's ideal shape. Not too round, but round enough.
Like short is key.
Short is
I'm
key,
not
of
sure
course.
Roundness, but plays as much.
But why? You displace more. You throw more, right? I mean, everybody loves Connor's turns. And if Connor was short and thin, do you think Connor would throw as much water on his turns?
Well, I ran the numbers actually. I don't know if you saw this or not.
What do they say?
I took the height and weight for every world champ that's ever existed, from John Florence, who's 6'1", 168 pounds, down to Peter Townend, which is 5'6", but I couldn't find his weight exactly. So the average height of all world champs across the board, 5'8" and a quarter.
Which is a short man.
It's a short man.
That is a short by any stretch. That's a short man. Yeah, of course. I mean, I think it goes without saying, right? That shortness, low center of gravity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That John is the outlier in that. And, you know, I think personally, tall surfing looks better, right?
I think so.
I think there's grace when it's done right, like a long drawn out turn from a tall man. I mean, if a tall man's getting hitchy, I think it's really, really hard, right? Like a hitchy bottom turn with a tall guy is just wah, wah. But when, you know, John, or let's go back to one of my old favorites, Luke Stedman, would draw out those turns. There's something nice about the lithe man. But in terms of what's being scored today and appreciated today. And again, I think that, you know, the Connors of the world totally fit the bill. You throw a lot of spray and you don't fall off, and you can fit into little nuggety tubes. Because it seems to me that the judges are scoring crappy tubes these days above airs, right? I mean, of course, when Philippe throws giant rotors, there's no question. But it seems like the judges now have fatigued on the sort of standard, you know, whatever, it's the standard air reverse.
Yeah.
And it seems like it doesn't even knock your score up at all.
Right.
Where it seems like if you fold into a pretty crappy tube, you definitely get a couple points out of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you and I are cursed then, because how tall are you?
Cursed. I think I'm 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, 6'1". But you got blonde hair, so that balances you out?
Kind of, except I just was at the hairdresser, speaking of hair, and she said, wow, I've never seen your hair so brown. So maybe I'm coming back down. Maybe my balance is...
Lost a few points.
I'm losing.
Did she try to wash your hair?
She does. That's the time that it gets washed.
Just tell her now.
Can they cut your hair without washing it?
Mine do.
Oh, okay. I'm going to tell her no.
Yeah. I have to fight for it sometimes because they want to, but yeah, I don't let them do it.
You're a brave man.
I'm a rebel, dude. Fighting with a hairdresser. So
when you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Let's do a topic. Kelly Slater. Actually, before we get into Kelly Slater, more on fashion.
Yes.
I went to Instagram and I asked listeners to send us their thoughts on things that they want us to discuss.
Okay.
This one was directed strictly for you. And I think that this can be an ongoing segment. Somebody wanted to know why you were wearing pink Vans in our last recording.
They weren't Vans. They were Nikes. They were pink, pink Nike skate shoes. Yeah. I love the color pink.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I've always loved it. My first skateboard was a pink Lance Mountain, all the way back. I think my first like good BMX bike was a pink Taro or something like that. Like, yeah, I have a long, so I'm not on the pink because of the trend.
Well, when I saw the comment, I wasn't even going to bring it up. But then I came in and I saw the shoes you're wearing today, and I just thought, well, this is a recurring Instagram.
Yeah.
We should have photographed the pink shoes, and now we can photograph these shoes and show people what you got. Can you explain them?
They're good. They're just a classic Givenchy with the Rottweiler face.
Is it a classic? I was unaware.
I mean, the Givenchy has used this print now way too long. They should have retired it. When I got these shoes, I think I got them 5 years ago, and I thought, oh, this is an amazing one-off. But then they've reissued this print. So now I'm annoyed by it, but they're good shoes.
All right. Can we Instagram them out?
Yeah, totally.
Perfect. All right, cool. People want to know, what shoe is Chaz wearing?
Okay. It's a Givenchy today.
Important. So Kelly Slater versus old age. You wrote a soliloquy to Kelly and why you need him in your life. I'm going to take the counterpoint. because I sincerely believe it, but I'm going to allow you to take the floor and lead us off.
I just think Kelly Slater is the only thing between humanity and a mass extinction event. I don't know how the you know, the fibers holding the universe together, what they even know what to do without a professional surfing Kelly. And quite frankly, if he was going to retire at the height, he should have retired after 11. He's already decided to fade away instead of burn out, as the saying goes. And so I'm excited to just see what happens to this 50-year-old man and 60-year-old man and 70-year-old man as he's continuing to surf professionally. I think at this point, Kelly's way past the point of no return.
Yeah.
He's pushed it so far beyond when he should have retired, right? That the only thing to do now is stick with it, and not to see if you can ever win again, but just what is the, how long can a man stay on the professional surfing tour? Aren't you curious?
So long his bones are breaking.
Sure.
I mean, the guy's falling apart. Like, it could happen to anybody, of course, but I feel like your argument is just based in your own comfort zone. You love Kelly. You grew up loving Kelly, and you just don't want to say goodbye to your own youth and your own.
Could be. But it's too late, right? It's too late for Kelly to have exited gracefully. Kelly now is limping out on a broken foot. And so you might as well limp right back in and get on the horse. I mean,
he's getting boxed out by every competitor, like at every venue, places that we thought Kelly dominated before, guys are smoking him now.
Sure. But part of it though, I think is Kelly's got to ditch the boards. I mean, the people who work for Slater Designs are fantastic, but the boards are just very clearly not working. And when people call him out on it, did you read the Instagram battle?
Which one?
Colonel, whatever his name was. Some Florida guy,
yes,
who called him out, and Kelly lit him up, right? So you know that the nerve is raw for Kelly. But I don't know how Kelly looks at videos of himself and thinks, yeah, I'm surfing as good then as, you know, I was a couple years ago. But maybe again, it's the same issue with the haircut and the Metallica shorts and the beach grit trunks of your mind just accepts what it's seeing and then thinks, oh, this looks good. And so Kelly looks at those videos and thinks, yeah, I'm ripping.
So the boards that they really advertise and I think have been selling the most of are the Firewire construction boards, of course. But I think the ones that he has actually surfed best on are the traditional poly with a stringer boards. Those are what he ends up winning heats on. And they have the Slater Design logos, but those aren't the ones that they're selling on their website and really actively promoting.
Yep.
You know,
I mean, I don't know how somebody watches that. I see them way more often than I would have ever thought, you know, at the beach and Cardiff and stuff. Like, people will rock up with Kelly boards. And I have no idea beyond liking Kelly and, you know, but anybody who's seen him surf on those boards, does it seem like a good advertisement to you?
No, Stu Kennedy is the great advertisement for the boards.
And Stu Kennedy to me is ripping far beyond, you know, I mean, you could almost argue, or it could be argued that Stu is ripping good because of his boards, right?
Yes.
I mean, 'cause he was kind of a nobody before.
Totally.
And all of a sudden he's like a genuine, you know, not a title threat, but he's a threat to win heats
at a right-hand point break.
Sure.
Is, yeah.
And so, yeah, so it could be argued that the boards make, I mean, that should be their tagline. Boards so good that even Stu Kennedy can surf,
but they make Kelly look like
awful,
awful. So, okay. A couple questions about Kelly in retirement. Then he's arguing with some rando on Instagram.
Sure.
Random to you and I, but I guess those guys grew up together in Florida and that guy is a burnout, you know, and I think Derek might have done a little interview with him on Beach Grit.
I think Derek actually just had dug up, or he either interviewed him or dug up his old lost video clip where he like describes himself in the clip.
Which is, I'm a mediocre surfer and an excellent beer drinker.
Yep.
You know, that was his clip. So the fact that Kelly's fighting with randos on Instagram, I feel like is an indicator that he's already acquiesced his title contention and like he's going into retirement, because you should just be focused on surfing J-Bay, dude. What are you doing arguing with some random dude on Instagram? You know, like that indicates his headspace to me in a way that doesn't bode well for a world title threat.
I totally agree with you there. I don't think Kelly will ever win a world title. And I think Kelly doesn't think Kelly is going to win a world title. I wonder if Kelly likes to surf these waves. And how else is he going to surf these waves with one other guy in the water, right? Yeah. And why not? I mean, I think Kelly has the wanderlust disease, where I think even after, you know, he just bought a nice house in Hawaii and theoretically maybe we'll spend time there. But I think Kelly is the kind of guy, like he Instagrammed how long it took him to get to J-Bay, right? It was something like, you know, after 36 hours in transit, I'm here kind of thing, where I think that's just Kelly's life. Yeah. And Kelly doesn't know how to live other than that. And so if you're going to continue to travel around the world to these places that you already love, right? I'm sure he loves almost all of these places besides maybe Brazil. And you have a chance to surf with one guy out. Why wouldn't you just keep the train rolling, right? Which at that point, then if Kelly's only doing it so he can surf with one guy out for a couple heats, should the WSL fire Kelly Slater? Should they say that, hey, this tour is not here for you to surf alone. Thank you for all you've done, but Kelly, you're fired.
Yeah. Which might be a bad business decision because he draws more eyeballs probably than most guys.
100% still. Yeah. I mean, I think it's this, if it continues, and I hope it does continue, because again, I don't think Kelly can do anything else. And he's still, when he's not on his boards, he's still fun to watch surf. I think that even the day he gets unfun to watch, then it'll be real fun for us to continue to, okay, what is the best surfer in the world to have ever lived look like when he's, you know, 63?
Yeah.
Like, how can you, you know, where does it go?
Look at Tom Carroll as an example. Like, Tom Carroll's a guy who I feel like is more fit now than he was 20 years ago. And obviously he's kicked a drug habit and stuff, but he surfs unbelievably well. I saw him surf lowers a year or two ago and I was like tripping how hard the guy was ripping. So what's your thought though on Kelly? Like you said, his feelings get hurt. Somebody criticizes his board and his feelings get hurt. What are your thoughts on that aspect of Kelly?
I mean, I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think who in sport cares enough to even look at their own Instagram, right? Everybody has managers and companies doing their accounts. And, you know, I think that the cool thing to do for athletes, or probably the healthy thing, or for personalities, is to distance yourself from the conversation.
Right.
Kelly, the fact that he doesn't, the fact that you can, if you're persistent enough, you can get the greatest surfer to ever live and the biggest star in surfing still to tweet you back, or, you know, Instagram message you or something like that. And that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I yeah. So I love it. I love the fact that Kelly engages like that. It's, to me, it's the same or similar to Donald Trump and his Twitter, right? Where people claim, we want Donald Trump to stop using Twitter, but nobody really does. It's, you're either, you know, incensed by it or entertained by it, yeah, or you enjoy it, or you think it's good. You know, you're getting something, everybody's getting something out of it, whether it's rage or, you know, their truth. And to me, Kelly on social media is the same. It's something that, it's weird that he does it. It's weird that Donald Trump tweets too. He should have better things to do with his time, but I'm so glad that neither of them do.
Yeah. So it endears me to Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he's human.
Yeah.
And that's an element that I think is so charming, just because I just don't think that Arnold Schwarzenegger cares.
No.
I don't think that Tiger Woods cares. Whereas Kelly, it's like, oh my gosh, he totally cares. Because I don't know how you feel. Like, we posted, I'm going to get personal for a second, but like, with this podcast that I've been doing for 4 years, I never really have promoted it. I've never really branded it, because I felt like I'm just learning on the fly and I want to kind of figure it all out before I get too big of an audience and people really are critical of what I'm doing. I need to figure it out on my own. Well, then we're doing this Beach Grit thing. And so you guys posted on Beach Grit, and now it has a brand new audience where maybe it's being forced in front of them. They didn't find it on their own. The mm-hmm. people who found it on their own 3 years ago, they want me to succeed because they found it on their own.
Sure.
Now these new people, they're getting it crammed down their throat and they're going to be hypercritical.
Yep.
So in the comments section, a bunch of people who have never listened before, they're talking shit.
Yep.
And it's like, they're making fun of me and my feelings get hurt a little bit. You know what I mean? So how do you feel? Do your feelings get hurt? Do you have a thick skin? Like, what's your thoughts on getting internet feedback?
Yeah. I mean, oddly, I think, and this is probably just 'cause I'm stupid, it's probably not a credit. It's always funny. Almost always funny to me. If it's, especially if it's well put, the only ones that annoy me are ones that are like, when somebody says something stupid that doesn't hit the mark, then it doesn't annoy. It's just like, well, you wasted everybody's time by posting something stupid.
Yeah.
But the ones that are critical and funny, I truly, truly love. And I think, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I have no, I don't know if it's a thicker skin or what. It just, I enjoy it. I enjoy that part of the conversation, the people hating.
I'm of two minds about it. I've tried to actually think about it when I was driving over here. Like, I have a pretty thick skin, I think, and I'm not initially offended. Like, if they just say something mean, like, I can laugh at it too. It actually doesn't hurt me at all. But then I think I have insecurities about certain things that I've always had over the years that I maybe never addressed. And if somebody taps into that and says, I don't even know what it is, over-articulate certain words. I think that was one of the comments. And I was like, dang it, they're right. I don't know why I do that. When I'm talking in regular conversation, I don't do it. But for some reason, when the microphone's in front of me, I feel a need to make sure that they're understanding what I'm saying. I should stop doing that. I know I should stop doing that. And that person said it. Now my feelings are hurt.
See, but that's, to me, that's a real bonus of it, is you can actually get better, right? I mean, yes. the critique that hurts the most, of course, is the stuff that's true, but then you can change it. I think career writing, you know, it's the stuff that people said, oh, you're sounding like Hunter Thompson or whatever, right? When I was early on writing, I probably really was. And then I would think, oh, damn it. And so, you know, then I grew and found my own voice. But without that critique, those critiques early on, I don't know, you know, maybe I'd still just be parroting, you know, whatever.
Yeah, totally. So Kelly, endearing that he's just like you and I are.
Sure.
That his feelings get hurt. Yeah, I totally agree. A couple of other quick follow-ups from J-Bay that I actually didn't get to earlier. Tell me about your thoughts on the commentary team. Like, you wrote a little story about Joe Terpel's lack of passion or whatever. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I would like to see, I think the commentary team that they have is great for a super vanilla mainline, you know, one tone, but that's what it is it's this one version, one tone. Like, Potts is no different than Terpel, really. I mean,
right,
in terms of what they're going to say. Blakey is a total, you know, I mean, Terpel too. They're all serviceable. They can all say words and of what's happening in front of them, et cetera, et cetera. I would just love a different, you know, like for NFL or NBA or stuff, there's the color guy and there's the straight man. And I feel that it's just a bunch of straight men, right? Where Strider and these guys are supposed to be color, and Strider provides some color, I think. And Pete Mel provides some color. But those guys are more like sideline reporters to me. There's nobody. Potts is not the color guy, right? He's boring as fuck to listen to.
What happened to him, dude?
I don't know. It makes me so sad that he was this raging animal who turned into grumpy dad.
Balding.
Grumpy dad. And he just sits there and like, where everything he says is dull. So Terpel and Blakey are fine. They're just the disservices. There's no color. And I would love, you know, that WSL has a new CEO now, et cetera, et cetera. And I would love, as they're hopefully reevaluating, that they'd be willing to take more risks. I think, did we talk about David Silver last time?
No.
Here? And the NBA commissioner, to me, is amazing. I met him, the pleasure of meeting him once. And you could look in his eyes and see he's just not afraid about stuff. He's not afraid of the future. He's not afraid of other people. You know, his whole thing was where the NFL would clamp down, which is, you know, what the WSL did initially. NFL would clamp down on any unauthorized posting, YouTube, you know, social media, anything of any NFL game rigidly, and I think they still rigidly control their brand. David Silver, NBA commissioner, came in and said, this is our future. Our future is people sharing this stuff. Zero, or I think very little control over anybody can, you know, post stuff on YouTube, NBA stuff, post it on their Facebook, post it everywhere. He's also pushing for the legalization of sports gambling in the United States. So it's this real progressive kind of thing where I would love for the, but part of that, and part of what I think he sees is our fans of the NBA need more ways in, right? And so people can be critical of the product, and that's not a bad thing for the product, right?
Right.
Which I would love for the WSL to get somebody besides Blakey or Terpel in the booth who can actually criticize the judges, who can, you know, call shit talk the surfers. They need just a more robust color team, because that's what we all enjoy doing, right?
Totally.
We enjoy watching the heats and watching the events and both saying what stuff is good, like, oh man, you know, Toledo's double oops. How do you beat that? But then also saying, can you believe, you know, that crappy turn or the hitch in, you know, whoever's get up or the, you know, midwave claims that are funny or, and they just, the WSL refusing in the commentary booth to make it interesting or refusing to even allow it to be interesting is a major disservice. And again, I don't think it's gone on way too long. I don't think it's Terpel and Blakey's fault particularly. I think it's Potts' fault. But it's not really his fault. He just doesn't belong there. They have the wrong color guy. And who's Blakey's color man now? I can't even remember.
Pete.
Yeah. I like Pete. Pete's okay. But again, I think Pete and Strider should be the sideline reporters.
Yeah.
And you should get somebody in the booth next to those two guys, Terpel and Blakey, who actually, you know, will be willing to have fun shit talking and et cetera, et cetera.
Dave Wassel. He's fantastic in the Volcom events.
Sure, totally.
I agree with you. And so it's clear that the WSL's intention from the get-go is like, we need to legitimize this and appeal to the broadest possible market. And so we're going to make it vanilla. But I think now that they've kind of done that and established that foundation, they need to adjust in that way for sure. And I wonder if you're right, the new CEO, Sophie Goldschmidt, will implement that. It doesn't seem like that's her background at all. She's worked with female professional sports teams and also done a lot of licensing deals, international markets, and developed that whole side. So I think that's what she's going to be doing. But I agree with you completely. If you and I are having a more accurate, elevated conversation about what's going on, and your commenters are on Beach Grit and my commenters are on Instagram, then that's a shame. You're supposed to have the authorities doing it, and we're doing a better job of it than you guys.
Well, I mean, that's I genuinely believe that Beach Grit covers the WSL better than the WSL covers themselves. I think, you know, we cover it from more angles. We cover stories that they won't, and not just negative stuff, right? Like everything from Wilco's hair, which would be a super funny segment, I think. Yeah. That damn picture is up every single time he serves, and nobody's looking at that picture and saying, oh, that's totally, that guy looks normal. Everybody's giggling, right? Yeah. Everybody around the world is giggling when they see Wilco's, I mean, except for 40-year-old moms, probably think, oh, look at that, one of us.
Take this photo to the stylist.
Exactly.
The Wilco.
Yeah, the day, so I'm gonna petition. They should let me and Derek Riley in the booth is what they should. The day the really WSL has me and Derek sidle up to Joe Terpel for a heat is, I think, a good day in the WSL history.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was going to ask you, who should those guys be? I mentioned Dave Wassel, but I agree. You guys would be perfect.
I mean, I think frankly, they should be surf journalists, right? It should be Steve Shear. It should be me and Derek. It should be Sean Doherty.
Been great in the booth. He's been in the booth in the past.
Totally. I mean, they should. I don't think it should be professional surfers because professional surfers, you know, are fine, again, to provide some of the color. But I think you need people who, for better or worse, stare at these damn things all day, every day and think weird things about them. Yeah. That's who you need to kind of spike it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So firstly, Joe Terpel, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus and like they all have pros and cons, but a couple things need to be discussed. Joe Terpel has a shocking lack of passion. For a guy who loves surfing, he does not express it at all through facial expression or vocal expression. It's like he'll watch the craziest barrel at Chopu. Some guy get blown out and he's just like, wow, that was a cool barrel ride by so-and-so, high in the pocket, you know. And you, in your article, you wrote about him witnessing two different shark
attacks.
Three. Oh, okay, right.
He was in the booth calling three shark things. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the amazing one with Fanning and then two during this event. And he's, he is nonplussed. He does not get rattled.
His pulse doesn't even raise.
No.
Okay, so now Mick's getting on the sled.
Yeah.
Right?
Which makes me wonder, like, what kind of hell has Joe Terpel seen that gives him that ice water running through? I mean, was Joe Terpel a secret agent somewhere?
Ah, good point.
Was he? What was he?
Let's dig in, dude. You're the journalist.
I'm gonna hit Joe Terpel up and figure out what he was.
The other story that really somebody needs to write. This is a Beach Grit thing for sure. Needs to write a very thorough analysis of the demise of Martin Potter. You touched on it just a little bit. Martin Potter was the godfather of 110% surfing, just animalistic surfing back in the day. Redefined, you know, what surfing was. Now, he literally regularly advocates for 70% surfing. He will say, John should tone it down a bit and surf 70% to make it through this heat. And I'm thinking to myself, that may be true, actually. Based on the judging criteria, that is an accurate statement. But it's horrible for surfing and the direction that we want it to go. And it's anti-POTS. It's the opposite of who you are, dude. It's heartbreaking.
It's a real shame. Like, I mean, the breaking of POTS, I think, is one of the great tragedies of the WSL. I truly think, like, I mean, because nobody looks, I don't think, at a poster of Martin Potter with the, you know, the long stringy hair and the snarl anymore.
Unwashed hair, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, completely. I doubt that Potts ever washed his hair, but I don't think anybody looks at that picture now. I certainly don't. And think that guy was an animal. I think, oh, dude, please, just no more. Put me out of my misery. I can't be bored to death anymore.
Right.
Yeah, he became so boring. It's a shame. He should have never been there, right? They gave him a job that he shouldn't have, and somebody should have realized that early on and said, Hey Potts, not only does this not suit our viewers, it doesn't suit your legacy.
Yeah.
And so let's, you know, push you off somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as a counterpoint, they do have other legendary dudes like Barton Lynch,
sure,
and
Barton
Sean
does great.
Thompson, mm-hmm. But those guys are awesome. They're awesome and they're still true to form. Like, they are the same guy that they were back in the day.
Yeah.
They've aged gracefully.
Yep.
Whereas Potter's like done. He's turned into a grandpa, dude. He's gotten soft.
Which is totally fine. Like, if Potter is fat and happy, then that's awesome for him.
Yeah.
But don't make me listen to the fat, happy guy.
One of my huge, big complaints, I was talking about Albie speaking incorrectly last time.
It's genius, Albie Lair.
Right. That was my mistake. I apologize, Albie. My hugest complaint for Martin Potter is that he constantly uses the word literally to mean figuratively. he says, the waves are literally on fire right now. And I'm looking, going, no, Potts. They're figuratively on fire. It's actually impossible for the water at J Bay to ignite.
That's totally amazing.
He says it all the time. Yeah. You should listen. I want to devote a full weekend to just pulling YouTube clips and getting every
literally Potts.
Every literally Potts. And just creating like a 10-minute ongoing video.
That's really good. Literally Potts. Literally comma Potts is really a good title for something.
It's so literally annoying, Potts. Dude. He does okay, it I'm all gonna, the time.
I can't wait. How long until Tahiti?
August 11th.
Okay, so not that long. We're good.
2 weeks.
Okay, good. I can't wait to get back to the literally Potts.
Yeah. It's good to have Rosie back, by the way.
Yeah, Rosie, especially Rosie in South Africa.
It's homeland.
Fits nice.
It really does. Is Kaipo Guerrero gone for good?
I don't know. Okay. It seems like it, right? I mean, if Rosie's back. I think Rosie was only gone because she was having visa issues.
Right.
If I'm correct. And so she sorted her visa issues out. But maybe she could go back home to South Africa and not mess up her visa thing.
Yeah.
So maybe Kaipo's back.
I'd like to have Kaipo back. I like
sure.
Kaipo.
I mean, Kaipo again is a funny personality that they should throw in the mix every once in a while, I think, for sure.
I notice from the get-go this season a real underlying tension between Ronnie Blakey and Pete Mel.
Mm.
Have you picked up on any of that? I feel like, first of all, in the first couple events, it was like straight out Ronnie was like making fun of Pete and almost poking fun at him.
Ooh.
And I feel like Ronnie is a professional and he's pretty articulate and he'll set up lines of thought and logic. And then Pete starts screaming because Felipe did an alley-oop and Ronnie feels like it's a little bit of an affront to like the direction that he was going with his logic. And Pete's just like, Pete's not really picking up what he's putting down. And so I think Ronnie started to push back a little bit about that.
I'm totally going to watch for this too. This seems nice.
Yeah.
The odd couple, Ronnie and Pete.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And then, so I talked about it on the show after the snapper event, and a number of listeners Instagrammed and they're like, dude, I totally picked up on that as well. And then the next week, Ronnie posted video of Pete Mel surfing and was like, this is my good buddy Pete shredding, because he had just dropped an edit, you know? And that to me was a sign of apology. It was like, oh man, Ronnie's feeling bad about the way he behaved in the booth. So he's giving Pete a little olive branch. But now I've noticed it pop up again, actually.
I wonder, because in truth, Pete's not really a color guy. Pete could call the action, you know, probably just as good as Ronnie or Terpel. Like, and I wonder if Ronnie got so, if he has his feelings hurt and still feels heartbroken by the departure of
Ross.
Yeah, if Ross was his number one. Ross was his goose.
They were peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, man. And there goes Ross. Yeah. Just following John around the world.
Good job for Ross. Yeah. All right, so in closing for this episode, I need your guidance, Chaz.
Yes.
This is existential quandaries of a wayward 35-year-old male.
Okay.
Okay?
Ready.
Hair care advice, fashion tips, shoe tips, all that sort of stuff. I'm at a point, 35 years old, right? I'm at a point in my life where I've had some business successes, business failures, relationship successes, relationship failures. How old are you?
I'm 41.
So you got 6 years on me. You know, you're leading the way. Going into this next phase, I want to work less. I want to surf more. I want my time to be used more effectively and efficiently. So I'm going to rely on you. I want this to be an ongoing segment where I rely on you to help guide my life's path.
Great. Okay. I'm here.
It's a lot of responsibility.
I'm here for you.
All right. So I've got a couple of questions, 4 questions specifically. Number one, front traction pads, yes or no?
You know, I say no. Like, I haven't tried, to be honest, one of the new ones, like one of the new Octopus ones or who else is, everybody's releasing them now, right?
You guys were working with, was the company called Necro?
Necro. I think Derek is like a part owner of Necro or something. I think so. Yeah. Do they do one?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They might make traction. Though.
Yeah. So to be honest, I haven't tried the new stuff, the new rendition, but the old rendition, all I remember is my stomach and chest just getting so shredded.
Okay.
If you can't surf a board in the warm water, like, yeah, I don't know. I'm no, because if you have a dedicated cold water board, I guess, then maybe it's fine. But I don't even know how it'd feel on a wetsuit. Like, I like the way wax, you know, even feels under a wetsuit, like where you have a little bit of give and slide. And I have no idea, but I just remember getting shredded as a kid. So I say no.
Funny that you took a very practical approach to that. I thought it was going to be strictly a fashion statement for you. It's either it looks good or it doesn't look good.
I mean, it's really true. I did accidentally take a serious approach. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I don't mind the way it looks. I saw a kid at the beach the other day with one. It also seemed like it get really hot, right? You're at the beach, your board's sitting in the sun, just like cooking. It's got to just cook your board, right?
It's black.
Yeah.
Well, I've always felt like it's similar to the white wetsuit thing, where when you see Noah Dean doing this 8-foot boned out air, it looks cool.
Yeah.
And then now I want one. But the reality is, it's a real, I want to also figure out a segment. I think it's going to be called like Shredder or Kook. Like there's certain things that only like the best surfers in the world do and the worst surfers in the world and nobody in between.
That's really a good point.
And so one thing is, a GoPro on your surfboard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Only the best guys do it and the worst guys do it.
That's so true.
And so the front traction pad, it's like I've either seen Noah Dean doing it and it looks really cool, or I've seen a guy who bought a board on Craigslist and he actually, it's a rear pad with a tail kick on it, but he just put it like halfway on the board not knowing. Ooh. You know what I mean?
Ooh, yeah, totally.
Like, it's not actually a front traction. Yeah. He just did it wrong.
Yeah.
So those are the only two versions I've seen, and I'm afraid that I'm not going to do the radical air, so therefore I will be that loser guy, so I'm just not going to go front traction.
That's pretty true, I think, that if you're not, I think that's a good, I think you solve your own quandary there. If you're not doing big airs, then you can't have front traction, because like...
But will it let me do it? I'm thinking maybe it'll do a big air.
If you're there, if you're at that crossroads, then totally, jump over and see. See if the front traction, should put front traction on a board and see if you, how much higher you boost.
Well, it's like when you're a kid and you see the like Reebok pumps and you're like, sure, I can jump 3 feet higher if I wear those Reeboks.
Totally. Man, I just bought a pair of the Nike Air Pressures. Remember those? The Nike pump where it was actually a pump in the back? I'll wear them next time.
Okay. Yeah. That'll be the Instagram next time. All right. Topic number two. Marriage. Yes or no?
Oh, 100% yes.
Really?
Always. Marry early, marry often.
Often?
I mean, if needs be. Yeah. To me... And this is pointed, like, you're 35.
Yeah.
That's too old to be a boyfriend. So your next girlfriend, you should force her to marry you. Or, I mean, if there's any kind of even remote spark, just get married. Because being a 36-year-old divorcee is a way better look than being an ex-boyfriend.
Oh, I'm already a divorcee.
Oh, see, perfect. So, you've got that, but moving forward, yeah, being a two-time, being divorced twice or three times is a better look than just having a bunch of ex-girlfriends. So, okay, at this point in your life, I think once you cross over the 35, if you like a girl at all and you guys are semi kind of compatible, just get married.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I was looking at it all wrong.
Yeah, I think people, when you, it's like getting tattoos, I think. When you really agonize over a tattoo you're going to get and you really plan the perfect tattoo and then you go get it, you're going to hate it pretty soon. Every tattoo I have, except for maybe one or two, are totally poorly thought. Like, I've gone in and told the tattoo guy, what are you feeling like today? Just do whatever. And I never get bored of them, right? I mean, it just... Yeah. And,
right. This is the life advice I need.
Yeah.
So you come back married with a tattoo.
Totally. Don't put so much pressure. I think when people put so much pressure on marriage, that's when it goes downhill. But really, I got married. I knew my wife now I told her the first night I met her, I was marrying her, and we were married within 2 months.
No way.
Of first meeting. Yeah.
How long ago was that?
6 years.
How many kids you got?
One.
Okay.
She's got one. So, yeah.
Well, so I've been looking at it all wrong.
Yeah.
I was looking at it from the standpoint of like, geez, what's the benefit? Life as a single dude, 35 in like Southern California in the surf world, like, is pretty amazing, actually.
Sure.
And what is the upside
of marriage?
And like, I loved marriage, and like, I like actually partnership and like doing the hard yards and all that sort of stuff. But this is kind of awesome too.
I don't know. I think that the 35-year-old playboy, look at George Clooney, right? I think that George Clooney looked good when he was a playboy, you know, and this is just my opinion probably. He looked like he was having fun up until a certain age, but then you get to be a certain age and the, you know, debonair playboy, unless you're Italian, I think, just looks like, okay, this guy is holding on to his youth in an unfortunate way. It's time you take your medicine, you get married.
All right. Well, there's another element of it that I've always thought about, which is like, does it help or hinder a world title? Like, I look at Felipe Toledo on the rise, surfing incredibly, but now he just had a kid. Or Julian Wilson's a better example of like, this guy had all the world title hope in the world. Jordy Smith, now they got married. Will they be able to execute, or does it defer their attention and their focus?
I don't think it would defer. In this way, I think it's totally irrelevant. I think that when you look at the Jordys and Julians of the world, why both of them have not won a title yet. You know, I mean, I guess it's, they ran into a couple different buzzsaws, the Adriano buzzsaw, but, yeah, they have something fundamentally wrong. Julian should have won by now, right? Totally. Like, he chokes somehow, which is unfortunate because he surfs so, so well.
That's the problem. He's too good looking. He got too much too soon. He surfs too perfectly. It's like he doesn't have the drive and the struggle that Adriano has.
Yeah. And I want Philippe to win this year now. Philippe's my one that I want to win.
I'm going Jordy.
You actually want Jordy to win?
Yes.
Okay, but Julian is the one that I really want to win someday, right? I mean, yeah. Julian's like the guy on tour, I think, that, yeah, I actually genuinely pull for.
He will go down as the greatest surfer to have never won a world title.
You think even...
If he doesn't.
You think even more so than Taj?
Yes.
Yeah, he surfs better than Taj.
Taj is radical and like was a perennial fifth place finisher. Like, he deserved to be fifth, whereas Julian is... I mean, he deserves to be number one.
Julian surfs so good.
Yeah.
He surfs really good.
All right. Topic number three, soft tops. Yes or no? I saw you riding a pink one.
See, once you get married and have a kid, then you'll know, yay, for sure. I mean, so that's why I got that one, right? It's, which I totally appreciate also on the small Cardiff day to paddle it out. It's okay. Real fun. But even more fun is I toss the baby daughter on the nose and paddle out and catch waves like that. And then that's like... soft top heaven. But there's a, to me, so the great question is wave storm or catch surf, right?
Ooh.
Wave storm you can get at Costco, and I think they cost $1.99. Catch surf's a good for the, I think I got the log, which is maybe 7 feet, and it was a good $3.50, I think. And you know, I went and bought it full price because I wanted to get a support my local surf shop, but also give it a full review. And I will say that the extra money, how whatever catch surf does to their foamies, makes them way funner than a wave storm, I think.
I'm wondering, do they have like bottom contour and actual design elements in the board?
They must, because it surfs, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't ride round nose 7 foot regular boards, but this board, it's actually really genuinely fun. Like, it'll put a smile on your face.
Yeah.
So go get your Catch Surf. If you want to sponsor me, I'm on the market. My board sponsor just dropped me.
Okay. Well, dude, I'm the one who needs one. You don't need one.
It's Archer. I already have one. Give one to Dave.
I don't have beach grip money, dude. Yeah, I can't buy $350.
It's true.
So Wavestorm is the number one selling surfboard on the planet, by the way. How crazy is that?
Of course. Of course. I mean, you see them everywhere, right? The funny thing is now you see them. I've seen people ripping on Wavestorms. Like guys out the lineup who are like surf really, really good and are just on a Wavestorm.
Well, you see them in the lineup on that and you discount them immediately. Sure. And then they actually shred.
Yeah.
And
like, you can't discount the Wavestorm anymore. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the next step, this probably already exists, but there's got to be companies that are making like actual high performance design characteristics in soft tops.
I think INT does because I think they actually shape theirs. They're not pressed or something, which I don't know how you shape for them, but somehow it's a shaped board that's a foamy.
They might be pressed, but they just have more molds. Yeah. You know? And Josh Kerr was riding that it wasn't actually a finless INT soft top at J-Bay. It had little side keels.
Yep.
So he was able to get some grab on it, but he was shredding on that thing.
I mean, those boards, I have one of those too, but that's older. But yeah, it's like a proper surfboard almost.
You've got a full soft top quiver, dude.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go for the soft top classic.
Obviously, soft top is yes. So I'm going to get a front traction pad, get married, get a soft top. And then question number four, Instagram feels like a waste of my time. I guess the answer is you need it for business. You have a Reports from Hell Instagram, which is pretty much just advertising for beach grit. And so the question is, Instagram personal account, yes or no?
I say no. If you're a 35-year-old man, then no. I mean, if you're pushing, like you have a Surf Splendor one, right?
Yeah.
Which is essential. But if you're taking pictures of, you know, your food and your unwashed hair and your, you know, whatever else you're going to be taking a picture of, I guess if you have a private account and it's just for your family and it's a way to connect with your family, that's okay. But if there's anybody publicly who's looking at it, then it's a real crying shame, I think.
It feels masturbatory to me.
Yeah, completely.
And I've been like really apprehensive over the course of years to like post. I'm not a selfie guy, whatever. But then I talk to people around me and they're like, dude, you're developing somewhat of a public persona. Like people are interested. And I, as much as I'm into surfing, I'm really into wine and other things. They're like, dude, your wine friends want to know about your surf world. Your surf friends want to know about your wine world. Like, you need to post that stuff. You get to do cool stuff all the time, hang out with cool people, drink cool wines, post it. And then, so I do it to honor what they're saying, because I think they're right, but it still feels very unnatural.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll disagree with your friends. Okay. I think the day that you can turn the wine into a business maybe or something, then you start your, you know, your wine Instagram. Like, I think as a business tool, Instagram's amazing. But for 35-year-old men, quite frankly, to be doing any social media, I think getting news from social media, consuming social media is fine, I think, personally. Yeah. But to be participating in social media, but then look at Kelly. But again, Kelly's a business. So,
it is a business.
Yeah.
It doesn't, again, it doesn't mesh well with just my personality type. I feel like I'm fighting against my personality to engage in it. And the other thing is, it's just a huge time suck.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
Waking up in the morning, scrolling that for 10 minutes, and then multiple times throughout the course of the day. And it actually just creates anxiety for me.
Yeah.
I see all the things I'm missing out on. Like, oh, the waves were good here today instead of there. And what? And I just, it's not good for me.
But see, I guess you and I, though, are real dinosaurs in that way. But I guess not really, because kids aren't even using Instagram anymore. Right? It's all Snapchat and whatever else they're on. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. So I will, yes, front traction, yes, marriage, yes, soft top, no Instagram.
So good. We got a no in there.
Dude.
Perfect.
This has been so informative for me. I'm so grateful for your friendship.
Well, thank you. Me too. We're not going to fight like Scott Bass and you.
We will eventually. Don't worry. It's coming. Well, I was going to say, how do people get a hold of you? Beachgrit.com.
Beachgrit.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Beachgrit.com.
And Insta.
Insta Reports from Hell or Beach_Grit.
Right.
And yeah, be some good stories up on Beach Grit. There's a brilliant one from Long Tom, Steve Shear right now, the final day wrap. And there'll be a couple more later today.
Cool. And then thanks again to Surf Rider Foundation, surfrider.org. Become a member, contribute, all that sort of stuff. Chaz and I will see each other again in 2 weeks. Until next time, barrel.
Stay thirsty.
Thanks again to Surfrider Foundation for providing us our home studio. Thanks to Chaz for taking time out of your busy schedule of publishing to participate in this little project. I know everybody appreciates it. And of course, follow Chaz at Reports From Hell on Instagram and then beachgrit.com. And of course, you can follow us at Surf Splendor. Make sure to share the show with friends. That's how this show grows. That's what entices Chaz to continue doing this. So we appreciate you sharing the show. And then if you'd like to contribute to the show financially, you can make a donation at surfsplendorpodcast.com, where you can leave a one-time donation or subscribe monthly for $5, $10, or $20. We appreciate every little bit. It goes a very long way. All right. Thanks again. I'll be back on Thursday with an episode of Shaping Surfing with Dane Hance from Vulcan Surf. Look forward to that. Until then, get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves, and shred on.